This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 20th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 191. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature, the Burnaby by-election. 14 candidates are vying to fill seats left by two late longtime councillors. I'll introduce you to two of them, Martin Kendall and Mike Volko. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or has the BC NDP government shown its true colors since last fall when Premier John Horgan called a snap election during the pandemic? It's not about a better BC or working for you, which are Horgan's slogans, it's all about working for themselves and bettering the NDP. It's all about power. The spring session of the legislature ended June 17th, almost 2.5 years since Speaker Darrell Plekis gave the details on the corruption in the offices of Clerk Craig James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz, who are no longer employed at the legislature. In February 2019, the Information and Privacy Commissioner, Merit Commissioner, and Ombudsperson asked for whistleblower protection, merit hiring, and the extension of the Freedom of Information Law to cover the legislature itself. This is what NDP House Leader and Solicitor General Mike Farnworth said in response on February 5th, 2019.
What I want to do is we work with them as quickly as possible and get things done as soon as possible and work with them on what the appropriate timeline is. But let me be really clear. Those three recommendations are going to be implemented.
Fast forward to today. Nothing happened for the remainder of 2019, then the pandemic and the election in 2020. The three watchdogs wrote Premier John Horgan in January of this year, reminding him of Farnworth's unequivocal and public promise. The session ended June 17th, and still no action from the NDP on transparency and accountability at the legislature. If anything, it got worse. The NDP established a $500 million investment crown corporation called NBC and kept it out of the FOI law. The all-party committee that oversees legislature operations is keeping secret a report on a cybercrime incident that crippled the computer network for MLAs after the election last November. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, safety of journalists in Hong Kong on the line, legal and news workers warn after arrests. The police cited national security laws to make 5 arrests, comb the Apple Daily newsroom, and cart off loads of items. According to the police, the 5 arrested employees allegedly broke Article 29 of the national security law, which prohibits collusion with a foreign country or with external elements to endanger national security. Superintendent Steve Lee said that more than 30 Apple Daily articles published since 2019 had called for sanctions against China and Hong Kong. More than 500 police officers were deployed for the raid, a number which Journalist Association Chair Chris Young called extremely terrifying. He said the fact that a media outlet was considered threatening state security and being prosecuted for publishing articles was even more terrifying. In the Japan Times, Japan condom makers fear anticlimax at Olympics. The Olympics were supposed to be a golden opportunity, with hordes of eager tourists and tens of thousands of their innovative ultra-thin prophylactics given to athletes. But a ban on overseas fans, strict virus rules, and regulations preventing the distribution of their premium condoms to competitors have left manufacturers deflated. While organizers are still expected to hand out 160,000 condoms at the pandemic-postponed games, which start next month, virus rules should limit interaction in the Olympic Village. We'll see about that. In the Taiwan news, president of Taiwanese pro-China group dies of COVID. Chow Cheng Chun of pro-CCP Patriot Alliance Association died of coronavirus at age 77. Chu called for unification of Taiwan and China. He also invested in agricultural and fishery businesses in China. He reportedly had many close exchanges with key officials from China's United Front. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, officers, sergeants resign en masse from Portland's Rapid Response Team crowd control unit. 50 officers, detectives, and sergeants disbanded their own team a day after a team member was indicted, accused of fourth-degree assault stemming from a baton strike against a protester last summer. There were 100 consecutive nights of protests in Portland last year. The officers remain sworn members of the Bureau but no longer work on the specialized team that received additional training and was an addition to the officers' daily assignments. In the Seattle Times, Google to pay Washington State $400,000 to settle campaign finance lawsuit. It's the second time in 3 years that the tech giant has settled a campaign finance lawsuit in Washington. In 2018, Google paid $200,000 plus attorney's fees to settle a similar lawsuit, but admitted no wrongdoing. This time, the company agreed it did not comply with state law, but still disputes whether the law applies to the company. The lawsuit against Google found that at least 57 candidates bought ads on Google-hosted networks, and the tech company did not, as required, retain information about the ads and the candidates. In the North Shore News, parent driver nearly strikes kids on school playground, West Van police say. A 50-year-old West Vancouver woman was ticketed for driving without due care and attention, which comes with a $368 fine, after a very near miss at Cypress Park Elementary. The driver got her Mercedes SUV hung up on the fence, and as she tried to back out, she punctured the fuel tank, causing 50 liters of fuel to leak onto the playground, which Vancouver Fire and Rescue had to come and clean up. Same driver was caught speeding in a school zone 4 days later. That's Cascadia Calling in this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Burnaby, Canada's 22nd biggest city, the eastern neighbor of Vancouver. Voters in Burnaby are going to the polls on June 26th for a late-term by-election. 14 candidates are vying to fill the two seats left by Nick Volko of the Burnaby Citizens Association and independent Paul McDonnell. Volko and McDonnell both died in 2020. On this edition, I'll introduce you to two of the candidates. First, Martin Kindle has lived in Burnaby for more than 20 years. He is a Strata Council president, and he is a civic worker in Vancouver. I started by asking Martin Kindle about his decision to refuse campaign donations.
How much are you going to dig into your own pocket to buy your own signs and other equipment you need to run for election?
Well, Bob, it was just my own personal, you know, ethics and standpoint that I want to be truly independent, that I want to stand up for the voters of Burnaby, and I don't want to owe favors to building developers and other union-related organizations. As for my budget, I've got $1,200. I have currently spent about $900 of that. This just shows that, you know, I'm going to spend my money wisely, that I'm going to, you know, make good buys that can get me a lot of exposure, and it's worked well so far. It's I really think politics is kind of a broken machine right now, where all these you know, the NDP and the Liberals and all their friends are basically throwing money at candidates so they do exactly what they want. And I think this has to end. It's time for the average Burnaby resident to have someone who's going to stand up for them at City Hall.
But why do you want to become a politician, become a public person on Burnaby City Council?
It all goes back to about 4 years ago. I had twins, and ever since they've come into the world, my whole perspective on life has changed, honestly. I want a better place for them. I want them to grow up in a clean and healthy environment. I want them 20 years down the road, after they've done university and all that, that if they want to live in Burnaby and start a family here, I'd love them to have that opportunity. The way things are going, though, with housing prices and the policies, I don't think that's going to happen. If it keeps going the way it is, I think Burnaby's going to lose its soul, and I think it's going to be like Vancouver, where there's literally, I don't know, all the houses are bought, but nobody's inside of them, and that's not good for a community.
Burnaby has changed a lot. Only recently could you put the words skyscrapers and Burnaby in the same sentence. Major luxury developments are happening while activists have demanded more social housing.
Well, as far as the skyscraper thing, I live directly across from the Gilmore Place mega project. They're putting 360-story towers right in my front yard right there. I'm not against this. I think it's definitely a needed thing for densification, that, you know, it's on a SkyTrain line and you've got to have a lot of people living there to get them out of their cars and onto transit. That being said, as far as, you know, affordable and sustainable housing, I really think the city of Burnaby needs to have some new ideas. They need to take the pre-existing single family housing and they need to do things like make it into family friendly affordable housing, like duplexes and triplexes and with secondary suites. And I just think they don't, you know, they don't think in a modern way, that they, you know, basically, if, you know, if your house is too small, they would rather that you tear it down and build a giant mega 8 or 9 bedroom house that's, you know, as big as you could on your property. And I don't think that's the right way to go. I think, you know, I have people who have talked to me and they said that they, you know, their parents have a house and they have land and they would love for them to live on it, but they can't, you know, build a laneway home, or they can't get a tiny house and put it on there. And we got to stop that way of thinking. We're in a housing crisis. It's the long and short of the story here. And we got to think in a different way, because, you know, the way it's been going for the last 20 years, this isn't working anymore. And it's becoming pretty obvious to the average Burnaby resident who's trying to live here.
He wants more green energy, safe and clean parks, and an end to illegal dumping in Burnaby. He also wants more accountability at City Hall. I asked him how he would balance those needs.
As far as the clean parks and playgrounds, I think during this COVID crisis, I think it's become extremely clear that in these developments where there's a lot of high rises, that honestly, the playgrounds and parks are the heartbeat of the community. It's where the families go and bring their kids and they want to play in a nice, safe, clean environment. I think the city of Burnaby has done a decent job of making that happen, but at the same time, I've also seen examples where they've definitely let it go to neglect, honestly. And I don't think that's right, honestly. I know that they have $4.7 billion sitting in the bank. They had a surplus of $129 million this year, but I don't think their priorities are straight. I've been on my strata council for 10 years as a president. I've had to make decisions that basically to balance the books. I've had to make decisions about, you know, raising people's strata fees. I've had to make decisions at the end of the year. Oh, we did well. We have a surplus. What do we do with it? I don't think the city of Burnaby is making decisions that have the taxpayer in mind. I think, honestly, that $129 million surplus should have gone back to the taxpayer, and that the increase that they're getting this year should be less. And that's how I honestly feel about it. I just think the city of Burnaby's lost their way in City Hall, and I don't know why. But I'd like to be there to kick them in the butt and maybe get them back on track. Well, my platform is on my website at martinkendall.ca. That's martinkendell.ca. I've got my platform on there. I've got a pledge, which I intend to follow through on. And if you're out and about in Burnaby and you see a really tall guy with a purple shirt that says "Vote for Martin," that's probably me. And feel free to come up and say hi. And I'd love to have a chat with, you know, Burnaby residents and just hear what they have to say about this community. I think it's a great community, but as I said, I think we're losing our way and the average taxpayer is being left behind, and I don't think that's right.
Mike Volko is another of the 14 names on the ballot for the June 26th by-election in Burnaby. His last name is very familiar to Burnaby voters. Mike Volko is hoping to assume the seat that his father Nick left when he died last year. Nick Volko, who battled brain cancer, was elected to 8 terms on Burnaby City Council. He had a career as a truck driver and in politics was the voice of the working man, very well known for being accessible to voters and also had strong opinions against corruption. Mike Volko, his son, is 37 years old, the same age the late Nick Volko was when he entered local politics. If elected, Mike Volko will push for a freeze on property taxes and will push to seek a more fair system of taxation. because land assessments, he says, are overvalued.
Why do you want to get into politics?
The reason that I wanted to get into politics is for basically about my entire life, 37 years, I would say at the beginning stages of my life, I was dragged around by my father just because my mother was watching my two sisters. So I got to go to all the political events and sit there and listen to everything that was going on. I met all the people, met all the citizens along with my father. And I mean, at first I wasn't too fond of it. I was a young child, but then I grew to appreciate what he was doing. And I got to witness the appreciation and the results of all the work that he did. And so when he became ill and then started having to miss the meetings and couldn't participate or be part of the progress that was going on with the city of Burnaby, it kind of upset me in a sense, just because I know how hard he's worked and how much he devoted his time towards it. And so it kind of inspired me just to carry on. It's like a passing of the torch in essence, but just to carry on what he had started. And like you had stated, I mean, the similarities, even though I am his son, and obviously I'll have a biased point of view because I was under his tutelage the entire time, but it's the eerie similarities of how he started when he was 37 within the city. He had three children. I also have him 37. I have three children. He was a truck driver at the time. I currently drive trucks as well. I don't drive the semi-trailers, but I do drive 5-ton trucks. So I guess in those senses, it seems fitting. But personally for me, I mean, I grew up in the city of Burnaby. I went to preschool, elementary school, high school. I played for Westburn Soccer Association. I played for Burnaby Minor Hockey Association. I mean, I worked, most of my jobs were through the city of Burnaby when I was younger. And I love that city, right? I love it pretty much as he did and as much as he probably still does. So in essence, I just want to continue on what he started and make sure that the city heads in the same direction or the proper direction that he had a vision for.
What did your father, Nick, teach you about life in the public eye and being a public servant and being a city councillor?
Basically, what he taught me was, it wasn't more of a classroom setting. It was more of just a watch and learn. But what I noticed from him is his availability towards anybody within the city was immediate. His cell phone was always on, and it was always available to anyone. He answered emails like clockwork. He would answer emails constantly. I mean, in the end, things became different, but just the availability and the need to want to listen and to want to hear out what the citizens have to say, instead of just making up your own idea or your own mind, hear what they have to say, because opinions can be changed and people can be educated at any age of their life. So he basically, like you stated, he was the working man, whereas most of the other people, they did have jobs, or the other counselors have jobs, but just different ends of the spectrum. So he was more of the blue collar guy. So he taught me that. And he also taught me to pay attention to everybody and to get to know everybody as small as you think that they are. Or, you know, if it's not a group and it's just an individual, they're all valued the same. So to hear everyone out, to listen, and just to be present in the fact that you're in a position that is, they are your boss, essentially. You do not run them. You do not change anything that they don't want, which unfortunately things do happen like that within politics. But yeah, he just basically taught me the respect of the position. I mean, to always be available and to understand that these people are your boss. You work for them. And it was also pretty good to know that you live within the same city, so you're all on the same team, in essence.
What will you bring to the council table if you are elected?
Well, what I hope to bring, I mean, if I am elected, is I hope to bring a youthful perspective. I know that there is a couple other people that are running that are under the age of 50, which is a good thing. It's good to have more people who are younger getting involved in politics, considering the demographics of the world and how things have changed. But in my own perspective, what I would bring would be the youthful aspect of it. Once again, the working blue collar class aspect of it. I will be running as an independent. My father ran for the BCA. I will be different on that sense. So I will not have a party line to be towing. I won't have anybody telling me what to do, how to vote. I will be making up my own mind along with the citizens with influence from them. And also the perspective, I have Métis status. So there's not really many Indigenous members that I know of that are currently in any of the city councils in the Metro Vancouver area. So to bring that to the table would be also something important, especially considering the pipeline issue with the city and how it correlates not only to a federal level, provincial level, municipal level, but also for the Native Indians or the Indigenous peoples of British Columbia.
What do you think needs to be fixed in Burnaby? What is the biggest issue that needs to be fixed with the remainder of this term to 2022 and then beyond 2022 after the next election?
In all honesty, I have opinions, I have ideas of what needs to be fixed. To implement them would be a challenge on its own as one person being elected into a membership of 8, right? But to have the ability to voice those opinions and to raise these issues is one thing. The issues that I do believe, like you were mentioning, you now can see Burnaby from anywhere through the skyline. I don't find that to be the best way of action for the city. I understand that there is densification happening all throughout the Lower Mainland, but I don't know if it's proper to be densifying one certain area considering the schools in the area haven't been upgraded. They haven't been growing at any source, but yet the people have. The infrastructure around it has not been growing. So the pipes with the water coming in, the sewage going out, I mean, those all need to be changed. The current infrastructure of roads in the area, there's nowhere to expand them. So the influx of people is just going to lead to more traffic. I know that if all the councils and politicians want to say, oh, well, we're building these things around public transit hubs, such as the SkyTrain. So we're encouraging people to use SkyTrain. Very much so. But majority of people like to be in their own vehicle as opposed to a public transit, unless it's completely convenient to go from A to B where they need to go. Like that. In my opinion, I don't think that jamming a bunch of buildings into one small area is the best course of action. I would like to see more. Currently, I live in a co-op just on the other side of Boundary Road in Vancouver. I can't afford to live in Burnaby with the things that are going on. I mean, single income, I got my wife taking care of our 3 young children. But I believe co-ops are a better way of looking at things, a better way of growing the city. I know that it won't grow as quick or as vast as they want it to, but I mean, the thing is that just because you can do something doesn't mean you have to, right? So they can rezone the whole city if they want to put 84 skyscrapers, but you shouldn't do it, right? In the essence that it's not really a good idea. And I mean, the course of action, they put the cart before the horse, in my opinion. So I think that what they should be doing is looking more into co-ops, looking more into rezoning single dwellings into duplexes. I don't really favor laneway housing because I used to live in a house with my girlfriend, who's now my wife at the time, in Vancouver, and they implemented a laneway house. And so now you had the general homeowner, a basement suite, and a laneway house with only 2 parking spots available. So that kind of throws in a mix there, but to put in a duplex lot which has a duplex garage makes sense, right? You're not congesting that way. But once again, I mean, I will only be one person out of 8, but at least I'll be able to voice these ideas and hopefully people agree with me and we'll have to go from there.
Mike Volko, running for Burnaby City Council. Mike, where can people find out about your campaign and your platform?
As I've stated, I am running independently, so. And I'm also not the most technologically advanced. So right now what I'm running off of is anybody can reach me at Facebook. My profile is public. It's just my name, Mike Volko. And on there, I have also stated my email address, which is mikevolko@gmail.com, all one word, all lowercase. Or they can fully reach me at my cell phone number, which if you don't mind, I'll put it out here, which is 778-388-0870, and my availability is just as my father's was. If you need to speak to me about something, I'm all ears, and I'll tell you what I think about it if I even know that it's on the radar.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to First Aid Volunteers Across BC. It's St. John Ambulance Week in BC. St. John Ambulance trained 35,000 people in BC last year in first aid and CPR. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine, I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for June 20th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on June 20th in 1975, the movie Jaws was released? The first summer blockbuster. Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.